נרספו, וגם כל עשו נפשי. נרספו, וגם כל עשו נפשי, לחצרו ישעשיים. ליבי, ירסו לי, ירדני, וגם כל זו נפשי לחץ לא יצשן. נרספו, וגם כל זו נפשי לחץ לא יצשן. ליבי, ליבי יבזו לי, ירענני אל כך
Good evening. Thank you for coming. We're very excited to announce Be'ezrat Hashem this Sunday on May 11th, 10:30 in the morning. We have the honor to host Rebbetzin Chana Brachel Siegelbaum from Midreshet Bat Ayin. She's going to be doing a very special talk on the qualities of the month of Iyar, the spiritual qualities of the month of Iyar. This is going to be a very, very interesting workshop, interactive workshop, coming up Be'ezras Hashem this Sunday, 10:30. This is for women and girls only here at Mayon Yisrael. So please come and tell your friends. It's going to be very enlightening. I want to thank the Rebbetzin for coming to our center, and thanks to all those who helped make this happen. I'd also like to thank, before we begin today's shiur, the sponsors of tonight's class. The class was sponsored by Igor Kradakovsky, and this was in honor of his brother, or for the schus of his brother, Moshe ben Avram, who passed away about a month ago. His shloishim was on Beis Iyar last week. May this be a big schus for his neshama, and may the family not know of any more sorrow, and only happiness and only goodness, and they should all be comforted, b'tayich shar aveli tzion, and very soon we should all be reunited with those that have passed on. Another dedication tonight was by Atara Ross, and this was in honor of her mother's yard site, Chaya Tova Bas Lazer. May her neshama have a very, very, very great aliyah to the greatest of heights, and channel lots of brachas to you and to your family, to the children and the grandchildren. Much, much nachas, and all the brachas in the material and in the spiritual. Thank you so much. The CD this week was sponsored by Dr. Zev Ravnoy, and this is in honor of his brother's yard site, Baruch Ben Yehuda Mordechai, whose yard site is the 8th of Iyar. May his neshama be elevated to the higher and higher and higher, to the greatest of heights. May he channel lots of brachas to you and to your family, and much, much bracha to the entire mishpacha and everything. Begashmias and beruchnias, thank you so much. Another dedication was by Henry and Charles Abasera. This is for the CD. This is in honor of their mother's yard site, which is going to be the Shabbos. Her name is Rachel Bas Yosef. May her neshama go higher and higher and higher. Channel much of blessings to the entire Rabbi Sarah family. It should be Rafu Shalema for her son, Meir Nisim Ben Rachel, and all brachas for everyone and Shaduchim and her Parnasa, and only good. Thank you for the dedication. I would like to dedicate this class tonight towards my sister in honor of her birthday, which is Zion Ir. Happy birthday, and Ashnas Bracha Natzlacha to Gitti Rappaport. Only a wonderful, wonderful, amazing good year for you and your entire family and everyone. Thank you all for these dedications. This week's parsha is Parshas Bahar. And in the parsha, we read about the laws of buying and selling. Hilchas Mekach u'Memkar, the acquisition and the buying, the purchase of property, the purchase of objects, and the sale of any kind of thing. So, you know, Shulchan Aruch, there are the laws in Choshe Mishpat. It's the fourth section of the Shulchan Aruch, and in Rambam, Hilchis Kinyan, and the laws of Kinyan, Hilchis Mekach, Hilchis Mechira. But many of the laws are derived from this week's Torah portion, from Parshas Bahar. It primarily speaks about the selling of land, but also mentions certain things in regards to in general, the sales in general. And one of them is the prohibition against Einah, that you're not allowed to deceive someone when you're selling. You can't sell, you can't overprice, and you can't convince someone to sell something at a much lower price than it's really worth when you really know that they're making a mistake and they can get a much more value for their object, or they can get more money for it, and you're convincing them to sell it much less. So that's a prohibition in the parsha. We also learn out the laws pertaining to finalizing a sale. What exactly constitutes the sale? What action is done in which it has been decided that the sale is final, and that both the seller and the buyer cannot back out of the sale. So the laws governing real estate is different than the laws governing the sale of movable objects. Each one has its method of kinyan, of how you acquire land or how you acquire what's called in the Talmudic terms, metaltalin, movable objects. We're going to talk now about the sale of metaltalin. So we know that, which are movable objects. So there is a dispute in the Gemara about how is a sale finalized. One opinion is the opinion of Rish Lakish, and he says in order to acquire an object you're buying, whether it's an animal, whether you're buying produce, whatever it is that you're buying that is not land, the laws that in order to acquire it, you have to do meshicha or hagbah. Hagbah means you lift it up, you pick up the object, you pick up the merchandise, you lift it off the ground, or meshicha means you draw it to you, you pull it in your direction. So you pull the object, you take the animal by the leash, and you pull the animal towards you. That is considered meshicha, pulling the object. And there is certain restrictions to particularly the method of acquisition through meshicha, is that if you're pulling the object towards you, it has to be only, it cannot be in a Rishus HaRabim, in a public domain. If both of them are standing on Wilshire Boulevard and one is selling merchandise to the other and he just pulls it towards him, it's not going to help because it's a public domain. If, however, you go off to a simta is like an alley, a little side corner from the public domain, a little side street or something like that, then it will work, or in the domain that belongs to both of them. Those are the laws in regards to Meshicha. That's how you, according to Rish Lakish, you affect a kinyan. And once that is done, even if there wasn't any money exchanged, the sale is final and none of them, not the buyer and not the seller, can retract or back out of the sale. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, says he agrees that's the way the final halacha is, that that's the way we acquire something. But Rav Yochanan says that that's not Torah law. That is by rabbinic decree. It's a rabbinic ordinance that is the way we should acquire property or acquire an object, is through doing Mashiach or doing Hagbah, pulling it or lifting it up. However, according to Torah law, the exchange of money affects the kinyan. As soon as the buyer gives the money for the object, even if the merchandise is still sitting in the store of the seller, and the buyer never touched it, didn't move it, didn't pick it up, he didn't even see it. As soon as he gave him his credit card, and he swiped the card, and the money was exchanged, the deed is done. That is according, and they can't back out. However, even Rav Yochanan agrees that the rabbis came along and the rabbis said no. Even though this is the way the Torah said, the kinyan that decides a kinyan, it would be much better for commerce, it would be much better for the peace of mind of people, there should be less disputes and less arguments, and to protect the buyer, the sages instituted that the sale should not be final until he moved the object, because they wanted people to take their merchandise out of the homes of the seller or out of the stores of the seller. Because if they would leave the merchandise there, we're afraid that just in case a fire breaks out or a flood, the person is not going to care to save it, because he says, listen here, the guy, it's not mine anymore. You know, it belongs to the other person. Why should I make an extra effort to take it out? I'm not losing anything. So therefore, they would much rather that when you buy something, take it home. Have it in your property so we have less problems. That is what the Gemara says. Now, those are the halachas defining a kinyan. Now, there is another set of laws that we want to discuss tonight. And that is that when someone sells something to someone else, there is a rule, there is a law that says like this. You can only sell something that you have already in your possessions, but something that is going to be yours, for sure it's going to be yours, but right now it doesn't yet exist in your property, it doesn't belong to you because you don't have it yet, you cannot sell it. For example, if I tell someone the animals that are going to be born this coming year in my flock, or amongst my cattle, all the new calves that my cows are going to give birth to in my farm, I'm selling it to you, and the guy gives him money for these up and coming babies. The rule is that it's an invalid. The action is not valid. It's meaningless. Nothing has occurred. The sale has not happened. And the reason for that is because you can't sell something that doesn't exist yet. Or if I say that all the apples that are going to grow in my apple orchard, or all the oranges in my orange grove that are going to grow this year are yours, I cannot do that because I cannot sell, or I can't even give away as a gift, a davar shaloi bala oilam, something that doesn't exist yet. Now, what happens if I'm pressed for cash and I really want to sell, but I can't sell because you can't sell something that doesn't exist, and I have nothing to sell but the fruit or these animals or whatever it is that I don't own yet. So how can I do that? How could I still make this sale? So the law is that there is one way around this, and that is if I sell you the cow for its babies, meaning I'm not giving you the cow that you can take the cow and slaughter the cow and make a barbecue from the meat. I have not given you ownership over the cow itself, but I am giving you ownership on the cow in regards to its babies. The motherhood of the cow is yours. Whatever this cow, its reproduction abilities, that's yours. So then I'm giving you something that is already tangible, something that exists already. Or if I'm selling you the tree for its fruits. So you can't cut the tree down and use it for lumber, but you have ownership in the tree itself. It's not just a fruit that is non-existent that I am selling. Now, in general, the difference, if I do this, that's called kinyan peiros. I own the original owner owns the guf. He owns the guf of the tree, the essence of the tree itself, or the essence of the animal. And the buyer owns the peiros. He owns all the fruits, all the produce, whatever it will produce, whether the tree or the animal. That's what he owns in the animal already now. Kinyan ha-peiros. And the other type, if I sell you, however, the cow itself, then you have what we call a kinyan ha-guf. You have the object itself. Now, there's one exception to this rule, in which I'm able to sell something, or at least I'm obliged to keep to my promise that I will give something, even if I didn't give you the object itself, I've only given you the produce that doesn't exist yet. And that is in a case when someone gives it to the poor. A person says that all the animals that are going to be born this year amongst my cattle is going to go to the poor people. I'm giving it to tzedakah. I'm giving it to Tomchei Shabbos. I'm giving it for whatever. I'm going to give it for a tzedakah cause, or I'm giving it to the Beis Hamikdash. I'm giving it away. I'm consecrating it for God. So then, even though they don't exist yet, Rambam says in the end of Perek Chav Gimel in Rambam, in Hilchis Mechira, or in Chav Beis, I'm not sure, remember which one, I don't have the book in front of me, but it's the last two halachas in Perek Chav Beis or Perek Chav Gimel and Hilchis Mechira, where Maimonides brings this halacha, and he says that are the Gaonim, there were those great people, rabbis, who say there is no difference, that even if I gave it to the poor people, they have no acquisition on it, and I can change my mind, and it hasn't become theirs. Rambam, however, argues, and he says, it does become theirs, and I can't back out, not because, in essence, it has become theirs already, but because there is an obligation of a person to keep his word in matters of tzedakah. So if you said you're going to do so, you have to keep your word. So it's more like medin neder, because of a promise. I said I'm going to do it, I have to keep it. But if I say I'm going to sell it to you, I have no real obligation to sell it. I want to sell it. I should sell it. But it's not considered. I don't have the obligation like if I said I'm going to give something for tzedakah. That is a brief overview of some of the laws pertaining to buying and selling. I'd like to do tonight is, as we spoke many times, that every law of Torah also has a more... an application that's outside of its most immediate meaning of physical interpretation. Of course, every law of the Torah, it means in the literal sense. We cannot read laws and say they mean metaphorically. Laws of the Torah are to be understood in their very, very... See, when you're learning Medrash and you're learning Agadah, you can explain certain things metaphorically. Many times, Medrash or stories in the Talmud mean only metaphorically. However, not so in the realm of halacha. Halacha means what the Torah says, this is what you have to do, this is what you do in the physical sense. However, in addition to that, it also has a more abstract or spiritual application, which implies to a person outside of the realm of that physical exchange of selling a cow or selling a donkey. All these laws of purchasing and selling apply to our service of Hashem as a Jew. Because we are all buyers in this world. Hashem sent us into this world as his agents to buy, like a buyer for a company. You are a buyer for Macy's. You're a buyer for whatever, for Home Depot. So we are God's buyers. We're here to purchase for him. Why are we here to purchase? What are we to purchase? We're here to purchase the world. Hashem wants to purchase the world, as it says, Koine Shamayim V'aretz. That Hashem is koine, he acquires heaven and earth. Why does he have to acquire it? Doesn't he own it already? It's his. Lashema aretz umalayoi, the earth belongs to God. So what does it mean that God acquires it? And the answer to that is, of course it belongs to God, but only he knows that, because he sees that he is the essence of everything, and without him, nothing can exist. However, that's the way God sees it, but the world and the creations and all the inhabitants on this planet on earth do not feel that way. This world feels very much like a public domain in which I am me and I am my master. I own myself. Why? Because I exist, because the world just came into being. I don't know how, it's just as a result of meaning I'm not talking about philosophically, but just the feeling, the sense that people have. And that is that our existence is absolute. We're not dependent on some higher being that's creating us. And thereby, I am me, and I'm my own boss, and my body is mine. My possessions are mine, my home is mine, my car is mine, my computer is mine, my children are mine, and everything else belongs to me, like Lavan says. Everything you see, Lihi, is really mine. Right? He said that to Yaakov. And that is the way we feel most of the time, and that's the way the world at large feels. So, but God's intention is that that lie should not last forever. That's a temporary feeling that he has allowed the world to feel in order for the purpose of creation to be realized, that we should have a self, we should have a discovery, we should have a self-discovery in which we discover the truth of our own existence, that our existence is really godly and it's emanating from Hashem, and Hashem is really the boss of creation. But that job to make the world, to bring the world to the awareness that Hashem is the owner of all of creation and all belongs to him, that job and that task was given to the Jewish people. We're supposed to peel away the lie of autonomousness, of self-sufficient, of independence, and we're supposed to make the world know that it has an owner, and if the world knows it has an owner, it will comply in every aspect of its existence with God's will. It will run in the manner that the Torah wants it to run in accordance to Hashem's directive. Our job is to implement the Torah into the world. Now, that's why when the Jewish people went out of Egypt, the first thing that needed to be acquired is the Jews themselves have to become God's property. So we went out of Egypt, one of the first descriptions that the Torah relates to the Jewish people is we say, Ad Yavoir Amcha Hashem, until your nation God will cross. Ad Yavoir Amzu, until this people, Ad Yavoir, until they will cross. Amzu Kanisa, this nation that you God have acquired. We use the word Kenyan because God has acquired us, because when he took us out of Egypt and he did all those really wonderful, amazing miracles, so what happened? So then he demonstrated that he is the master over the world and he took us as his servants and we became avadim, we became servants of Hashem. When we are now servants of God, it means that we belong to him. And being a Jew, living a Jewish life, meaning we are demonstrating in our life that we don't own ourselves, God owns us. That's why we do with our body what God says, not what we would like, and maybe what feels more comfortable or more enjoyable. I don't eat anything that I see and anything that I want. I can only eat that which God allows me to eat. And then even then, I have to ask permission first by making a blessing, and then I have to thank him again after that. And then I have a whole ritual of washing my hands before I eat, and all these laws and regulations that govern our life. I can't wear all the clothing that I like wearing. I bought this suit and I love it very much, but I have to check. And if it has linen and wool mixed together, no, I have to give it back. I can't wear it. So God is the boss over my life. I even make a sign on my body, which is the circumcision, in which we have engraved in our body the symbol that we are not independent beings, but we are God's servants. We're not ownerless, but there is a balabayas. Yesh balabayas. There is a balabayas leguf zeh, to this body. And then eventually, yesh balabayas. There is a balabayas lebira zu, to this entire palace. So we begin with ourselves. God acquired the Jewish people as us, as to be a godly being, but then we extend that ownership not only to our bodies, to all of our limbs and our organs and all our powers of our psyche, of our soul, but also we extend that into our possessions. Because when we live our life as a Jew, our home is a Jewish home. It runs in accordance to God's will. My kitchen is not my kitchen, it's God's kitchen, and therefore I have to do it the way he likes it. He wants two sets of dishes, so it's two sets of dishes. The food in the refrigerator is done in the manner that he, with the food that only he approves of, and everything in my house, all the way into my bedroom, it's all dictated and governed by the laws of Hashem. And that applies to all possessions and everything that we own. So God becomes the master of our small world. And being that human beings, in order to be alive, we have to interact with the world, which means to be sustained, we need food, we need shelter, we need clothing, which require us to take the objects of the world to sustain our life. And we live our lives in service of God, thereby we bring God's ownership to the rest of the world. And during the time of exile, when we travel to country and country after country, we extend that outside of the land of Israel and we bring it across the entire world, in order that one day when Mashiach will come, it will be clear that Lashem Ha'aretzim Eloyoi, that the entire world belongs to God, and all the nations of the world will acknowledge that as well. That is the objective of the Jewish people. And that's why it says also in the Mishnah, Masechtas Kedushin, Ani Nivreisi, I was created L'shamesh Eskaini, to serve my, simply it means to serve my master, to serve my creator, but then it should have said L'shamesh Esbairi, to serve my creator. It says L'shamesh Eskaini. Kaini means the one that has acquired me. Because creation itself, a person, God created the world, and yet he created the world in a manner which he concealed himself from the creations, allowing them to feel independent, allowing them to feel on their own, that they can do whatever they want. However, when he created the human being, however, when he took us out of Egypt, he acquired us, not and now we belong to him. He claimed the ownership over our lives. And that's our merit, and that's our great mission that we have as Jews, to acquire the entire creation and make it all godly. And here the question is, now again, if we take a little bit of a deeper look into this, this is not just an obligation, and sometimes might be felt as a burden, it might be felt as an encroachment. Well, everybody else is free to live their lives and do whatever they want, and we're just nebach, we're slaves of God, and we have to serve him all the time. And that comes from a very, very, very immature understanding. It's not that you have to serve Hashem because he's the boss and we have no choice and others can do whatever they want. Others, sadly, can live in a lie, can live in total deception. But we as Jews merited that God revealed the truth to us. And he showed us his might, he showed us his power, and he showed us that he is reality. And therefore, we don't have to live in a phony, lying state in which we're imagining our existence, which isn't even true. It's ridiculous. So it's actually the greatest thing to be living in a true state, in the MS, in the truth that Hashem is my boss and he is my reality, and I am his possessions. Now, the question we had earlier was, how does one affect this change? How do you take something out from the public domain and put it into the private domain? Make it declare that this belongs to God. So we said earlier, the halacha is that we have to make either hagabah or meshicha. Either we lift the object up or we draw the object. And both the idea of both these things is that the object is moving towards the buyer. Either he's lifting it up or he's drawing it in his direction towards him. But it's moving out of the public domain, away from where it was, and it's going into this person's possession. What does it mean in our relationship with God? We begin with our bodies. How do we make our bodies holy and godly? How do we clear God as the owner of our body? So simply, when I take my body and make it move in the direction of Hashem, when my hands, my feet, the rest of my body are doing a mitzvah, so I'm not using my limbs for my own sake, but I'm doing that which Hashem wants of me. I'm wrapping leather straps around my head and my body in the morning, which is obviously something that I'm doing to declare God's ownership over me, because no one has any pleasure in wrapping these red leather wrappings on their body unless they're a real lunatic. So if I'm doing it, it's because God is the master over me. He's my ruler. So then I've done a meshicha on my body. I pulled my body out from it being separated and disconnected, and I directed my body into the service of Hashem. However, that's externally. On a much deeper level, the way to make my body a godly body, to move it towards Hashem, means to cause a consciousness shift inside, meaning not just an external movement in the physical aspect of my life, but to make a more deeper impression on the body. Which means, if I elevate my consciousness from the consciousness of feeling independent, separated, disconnected, selfish, self-oriented. And I move my consciousness to recognize, elevate my consciousness, to recognize that Hashem is the truth of the whole world and the truth of me. And if God would not be creating me this very second, I wouldn't exist. And therefore, I ought to give myself over to serving His interests, because that's why I exist, to serve His interest. And then I recognize that so strongly that I actually get excited about it. And I want to draw close to the truth. And I become frustrated. And it bothers me so much that I live so much in the lie. That so much of my life I'm living this imagination. I'm living in this false fantasy of existence, of beingness that's not real. And I want to live in truth. So I'm actually yearning and I'm desiring to get closer to that emes, to that truth. That's called Mashiach. I'm moving myself in a deep inner way closer to Hashem. And that is accomplished through davening. Davening is the time in which we have to, we expand our spiritual consciousness and we minimize our egotistical consciousness. We develop a feeling of Hashem being emes and Hashem being truth. And we minimize the feeling of our own self and of our own importance. And our importance, of course, is not that we're not important, but our importance is in as much as we're serving Him. And that's what we do. That's what prayer is supposed to be. Not just a bunch of mumbling of words, but prayer is supposed to be a time when we meditate. We think about the words that Hashem is the master over the universe. And as we say, that the peak of davening is the declaration that Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, that God is one. One meaning He is the one power, Ches, in the seven heavens and in the earth, which are eight, is Ches. The Dalet, the four directions. God is the power. He's the reality of everything. And as a result of that, it's not just a intellectual a cognition of the mind, but we're supposed to draw down until we feel that in our emotion. It becomes our emotional reality. V'haftas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. You love God with all your heart. There's no space in your heart for any other love. B'chol nashtricha with all your soul. You got your Mashiach. Now you've moved into a godly place. Instead of the way you wake up in the morning filled with self, filled with I am, and I need, and I want, and give me this, and I'm here to have a good time, and have pleasure, and what's for lunch, and how am I going to entertain myself in the afternoon, and where we're going for dinner, and what am I going to watch today that's going to give me this sensation. And davening transforms all of that. It becomes, what's my purpose? What am I here for in this world? What does God want from me? And by the end of davening, I can say to Hashem, Hineini, I am here to serve you. Where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do? Then I have done Mashiach. I've moved myself, or Hagabah, I've lifted myself up towards Hashem. Now, what happens? So that's for sure a kinyan. If a person has done that, he has given himself over to Hashem. For as long as that lasts, of course, we have to daven every day. We have to continuously bring that consciousness shift every single day. Now, Rabbi Yochanan, however, says that there is another form of kinyan, and that is the exchange of money. Who gives the money? The buyer gives the money. And the buyer, in this case, is Hashem. Which means when we do our work, Hashem responds and He pays for it. He wants to repay us for the work that we do. Now, payment can be understood, of course, in the physical. Hashem never remains a bal chayiv, which means Hashem never remains indebted to a person. If you did something good, God will for sure pay you back for the goodness that you've done. And Hashem pays us back with healthy children, with nachas. Hashem pays us back with parnasa, with livelihood, and with all the blessings. But there is something deeper over here as well. Kesef, Hashem pays money. Kesef means silver. It comes from the word kisufim. Kisufim means longing. As a result of a person's sincere effort to change their reality, to open themselves up to experience the truth of Hashem, to have a consciousness shift, what happens is they merit that Hashem should reveal Himself to that neshama. When you make an effort to try to peel away the cover-ups of nature, all the partitions and all the blockages that stand between you and Hashem, Hashem goes on the other side and He moves the curtain to the side and He allows you to see Him. I mean, when we say to see God, it means to see, to experience Hashem from above as Hashem shines His light into a neshama. A person that merits that Hashem should shine a glow of godliness into his soul, the person will be overtaken with a sudden burst of incredible longing to God. Because when you feel God's light is the most blissful. Hashem is the most, is the sweetest, the most blissful, the most delightful experience. He's irresistible. And when the neshama feels that, the neshama yearns. Like we sing, Ka Echsoif, Noyam Shabbos, I'm yearning for the pleasantness of Shabbos, which is the pleasantness of godliness. Kisufim, it's a kesef. Hashem gives us the kesef. He gives us the ability to love Him with a love much bigger than the limitations of our mind and of our natural emotions. We begin to love God because we're being pulled by a godly pull. It's much higher. That's the money that Hashem is giving as a result of our efforts. Now, usually that kesef is given after we've done the Mashiach. Now, as we move the object, we move our bodies closer to Hashem, and Hashem reciprocates and treats us to a divine treat in which He illuminates our neshama with a godly illumination. However, Rabbi Yochanan says, sometimes Hashem doesn't wait until we make the first move. Sometimes Hashem becomes impatient because He's waiting already 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and the person is not budging, the person isn't moving. The person is so obsessed with himself and herself and so self-centered, so deeply involved in pursuing their own pleasures and their own agendas and their own goals and aspirations, and they never, ever ask themselves the question, Ayeka, that Hashem said to Adam Arishan, Ayeka, where are you? What's going on with your life? What are you doing with yourself? What are you doing for me? Why did I send you into this world? The person never asked this question, why am I alive? Because he or she is so busy feeding their animalistic desires and wants and becoming all that they can be without giving God even a thought for a moment. So Hashem sometimes has no choice but take the first move and treat this person to a godly revelation from above. And that can come in many ways. But it's called a Sarusa Deliela, where Hashem shines His light for free. He delivers the money before we move the object, before the merchandise is moved. So Rish Lakish says, that could happen. Rish Lakish agrees, but he says that's not a kinyan. If you are privy, and if you are fortunate that God did that for you, lucky you, but guess what? That doesn't mean that you've been acquired by God. Because money doesn't cause any exchange. Money doesn't change. Money doesn't change the status of ownership. Why? Because inspiration comes, inspiration goes, and if you don't do the work yourself, you're going to be the same person like you were before. You're not going to change much. Change only comes about from a person's own efforts. Permanent change. Therefore, Rish Lakish says it's not a kinyan. Rabbi Yochanan, however, says no. It is Dvar Torah Mois Kainois, because it has to have an effect. If God has touched you with His light, if Hashem delivered the kesef, something has got to change. The person cannot remain exactly the same person who he was before. And therefore, we can expect a change, and therefore there is a kinyan. Somewhat of a kinyan. It might be a little bit of a kinyan, but there is a kinyan. There has been an acquisition, has been affected. That is the deeper understanding of this argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So now let's take it further and see how this applies to that which we had spoken about earlier, about the giving over, the two types of acquisitions in which someone can own the essence of something, or someone can own the fruit, the produce of something, but not its essence, in terms of God's ownership of us. So let's examine it as follows. There's three types of people. So we want to measure and say, how successful have we been in turning ourselves over into God's ownership, in transferring ourselves into Hashem's domain? So there are three types of people. There are people that Hashem has absolutely no ownership of them, over them whatsoever. That means that God is by them an absolute non-issue. He's a non-entity. They don't believe in God. They're atheists or agnostics. They don't care. God doesn't mean anything to them. They're living their lives nice and dandy, doing whatever their heart desires. And their perception of reality is, I don't know, the world just came into being on its own. That's the way they perceive the reality in their mind. Emotionally, they have desires rather that are very not, that are many ways not consistent with what is a holy desire or a godly desire. Their pleasure is necessarily in a good place. They could be good people. I'm not saying, but the it's not consistent with godliness. And the same is their emotions and their thought, their speech and their behavior is completely outside of the dictates of the Torah, outside of what Hashem wants. So that's one kind of person. Someone who Hashem has no acquisition on them at all. Then we have on the other extreme people, on the complete other side, who are managed to give themselves over into Hashem's ownership completely. They have sold themselves or completely allowed for Hashem to permeate their lives 100% from head to toe. Their entire being, every aspect of their life is completely godly. First of all, their sense of reality is that there's nothing other than Hashem, and that all of existence emanates from God every second. And they live in that consciousness all the time. In Pirkei Avos it says, I think this week in Pirkei Avos, Eizehu Chacham, what is considered a wise man, Haroya Esanoyla, the one who sees what will happen, that which is going to come out, one that can see down the road, one that can see the further consequences. The Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Balatanya, says, Eizehu Chacham, what's called a Chacham, Haroya, a true wise man, Haroya, he can see with his eyes, he can visualize Esanoilad, how all of existence is being born from absolute nothing every second, and that's the consciousness that he lives in, because that's what he sees. When he looks at the table, he sees not the table, but he sees the divine power creating the table. So if that's his reality, so then God is the only pleasure of his life. God is the only drive in his life. All of his desires are only towards Hashem and towards Torah and mitzvahs, because that's what Hashem wants. All of his mind, his understanding, his appreciation, his worldview, his intelligence, seichel is only a godly seichel. His mind is a godly mind. His emotions, his or her emotions, are only all his loves and all of his fears. Only thing that he loves is he loves Hashem and anything related to God. And all of his fears are only the fear of Hashem, of Chas V'Shalom becoming disconnected. And then, of course, all of his actions, all of his thoughts, and all of his speech, and all of his actions are permeated, are all mitzvah, are all holy. And if they're not a mitzvah, then they are l'shem shamayim, they're done for the sake of heaven, or even deeper, b'chol d'rachecho de'eyu, and everything they do, they know God. It means that the person is completely, like, for example, for a person like, people like that would be Avram, Yitzhak and Yaakov, our fathers and our matriarchs. They were called their Merkava. They were the chariot for God. That means that they never, and as it says, the meaning of a Merkava, a chariot, is a vehicle. Meaning their entire life was an expression of the divine will. They never contracted even one muscle in their entire body, in their entire being that was self-oriented. Every time they moved their toes, their feet, their head, every movement of their body was to serve Hashem, because Hashem is their only reality. This is a person who is completely God's possession. Hashem owns them completely. Hashem has what we call kinyan haguf. He owns their essence. Then, between these two individuals, one that is completely ownerless, and he thinks he owns himself. The other one who's completely an eved Hashem. That's what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is an eved Hashem, a servant of God, because God owns him entirely. In between these two individuals, these two extremes, are all the rest of us. Ordinary people that are in a constant state of friction and a constant state of conflict. On the one hand, we all have a neshama. We have a soul. And our soul, which is our higher self, has an intrinsic awareness of God. And the soul wants that our entire life should be dedicated and devoted only to that reality and only to the service of Hashem. But we know that even as much as we would like the soul to be our only self, that's not the way it is. Because we also have an ordinary self or a regular self, we might call it a lower self. But the problem is the lower self is more like our regular self, which we feel most of the time, in which we feel our passions, our desires, our pleasures, and our worldview, right? Which is not necessarily the godly one, in which we have a sense of freedom, a sense of I am and my life is mine. Now again, we have a neshama, and our soul and our Yetzer Tov is always interjecting and always telling us and directing us and pushing us to overcome what I want to do and do what Hashem wants me to do. But it's a conflict. It's not my regular, especially, let's take a look. Let's think about it. Think about your thoughts, our thoughts. How many thoughts in the course of a day will you say in yourself, in your own life, are permeated with godly content? How much of your thought, think about the entire day that you thought today. How many, you had thousands of thoughts, as the thoughts are continuously working in your mind. How many of those thoughts were filled with godly content? And how many of those thoughts were not necessarily bad, just empty of any godly content? There was self-serving, but there was nothing there for a higher purpose. I think most of us will have to admit that probably 80-90% of our thoughts were not in connection to the service of Hashem. Unless you're a yeshiva guy, sits and learns all day, and you're really learning, okay, then you're occupying your thoughts with holiness. But like this, most people, my thoughts are all over the place. Speech, action. But especially the deeper parts, the motivations, the drives in a human being. Most of the time, we're overcoming these drives. Here I'm being driven like this, and here my heart is pulling me this way. Here I see something, it's not kosher, it's not right, but it's still catching my interest. I want to look at it, I want to see it, I want to get closer to it. But I know it's not a Jewish thing, it's not the right thing, so I'm fighting it, I'm combating with it. So the reason for that is because as it's stated in Tanya, in Chassidus, it explains that we have two souls. We have a Nefesh HaLikis, we have a godly soul, and we have a Nefesh HaBahamas. An animal soul, a godless soul. Our nefesh of the kiss is a piece of God from above. And every aspect of its being is directed towards Hashem. Why? Because its sense of reality is Hashem. Hashem is its only reality. So of course, its pleasure is only Hashem, and all of its experiences are godly. But our animal soul is a klipa, coming from, it's part of the klipa realm, meaning that which obscures God. So Hashem is blocked in the animal consciousness. So God is not real. What's real? The world is real. The world is real. I'm real. And what's important? What I want. What is going to give me immediate and instant gratification. That's important. And that's what I'm after. And that's what I want. And that's what I'm reaching for. And if I wouldn't have a neshama that would override, that would come in and say, oh no, then I would just do whatever my heart desires, which would be very ungodly. So for all the rest of us, it's a struggle. There's a struggle. So what does God own? What does he own? Can I say that God owns my body? He owns my being? No, absolutely not. I don't know what my hands are going to do in a moment from now. Maybe my hand is going to be doing a mitzvah, but maybe my hand is going to be doing just a mundane activity, unrelated to any purpose, and I'm not doing it with the intention to serve Hashem. I'm just enjoying food for the sake of the enjoyment of it. And maybe even doing something sinful that God didn't approve of. Speaking things that are speaking Lashon Hara. Engaging in conversation that is not exactly what Hashem wants me to do. My mouth is being used in an anti-holy way, in an ungodly way. So does God own the body? No. What does God... But we can't say that God has no ownership, because as a Jew... And if we're trying to be an observant Jew, and we're trying to fulfill the Torah and mitzvahs, we do pretty much activities that are godly. There are so many times we are thinking what Hashem wants us to think when we're studying Torah, when we're having concentration and prayer, so that our thoughts are in compliance with holiness and fulfillment of Kedusha. When I'm saying how much we do spend quite a lot of time, we're saying a blessing, we're davening, we're learning Torah with our mouth. Those words are holy words. And our actions, when I'm doing a mitzvah, is Hashem's will. So Hashem does own something. What is he owning? He's owning the fruits, the produce, some of the fruits of my body, some of what my body produces. And what does my body produce? The thought, speech, and action. That's the production of the body. Those thoughts, speech, and actions that I manage, where my neshama, my soul, my yetzer tov has controlled those thoughts and speech and actions, they are merchandise or fruit that I am selling for God. I'm giving it over to Hashem, that I have purchased for Hashem. However, what's with all the other experiences that I have? That's not godly. So there's a partial ownership. I'm giving him the payrois, I'm not giving him the goof. God doesn't have the hardware, because he can't say he owns the hand, because we don't know what the hand is going to do. Now it's doing a mitzvah. How many times do we have the experience that we daven in the morning, and when we're davening, we're shuckling, and not just externally shuckling, but internally shuckling, shaking. We are really into the experience and crying out to Hashem, and we know that our success is only coming from Hashem, and Hashem gives me parnasa, and I'm davening and I'm begging, please Hashem, increase my parnasa, enable me to pay, to make a living so that I can take care of my family. And we're really, really into it, and we really believe that Hashem is the master of my life. And that is 7 o'clock in the morning, or 8 o'clock in the morning, and meet the same human being at 11 o'clock, 3 hours later, and all those feelings have vanished. Right now, he's sitting in his business, and he's engaging in maybe a little bit of a shady thing that's not exactly clean according to the Torah. And if you believe that God is the master of your life, how can you think that by doing something that is against God's will, you're gonna make a living? Now, of course, Hashem makes it in a way that he tests us. That a lot of times it looks like that if I do something crooked, you do make money. Okay, it's not going to last really, because it's against Hashem's will. So permanently, it's not going to last. But how can it be? It's the same person. The answer is, that was a time in the morning that the neshama dominated, and now my animal soul is dominating. So therefore, you can't say that Hashem owns the property. Hashem owns those thoughts and those speech and actions that we did manage to produce out of our holy consciousness. So that Hashem does have ownership on. So it's called Kinyan HaPeiros. Now, what happens if a person is frustrated and he says, listen here, I don't like this. I don't like this constant battle, the constant battle and never being sure what my day is going to be like, what my month is going to be like, what my behavior is going to be like, if it's going to be, especially based on what we said earlier, that living in an ungodly state is simply living in a myth, living in a lie, and a person has enough awareness to recognize that truth. And therefore says, I'm so frustrated. I want to at least, Hashem, I want to sell you all the produce. I want to give you everything. I want to declare now, Hashem, that all my thought, speech, and action over the next day, the next week, the next month, the next year, is going to be to you, Hashem. Can a person sell that? Can I make, and is that considered a kinyan? Has it taken effect? Has my life become, has there been a transformation? Has my life become a godlier life? Has my body become sanctified and belong to Hashem when I've done that? Because I can't sell you my feelings, my emotions, that I can't do. Because my emotions, I'm not in control of. If I have appetites and desires for things, but my behavior, I am making a very powerful commitment that when it comes to action, behavior, or my thoughts, or my deeds, I'm going to push it away. I'm only going to be thinking what you want me to think. I'm only going to be speaking what you want me to say. And I'm only going to do what you want me to do. For this period of time, I'm selling it right now. And the answer is, you can't do that. Since you can't give off something that doesn't exist yet by Torah law. Why? Because you don't have control. What is to say that what? That you're not going to be in a dark state in an hour from now, in 2 hours from now. Maybe, it's going to be, you're going to have a weak moment in which your Yetzirah is going to get a hold of you. Since you essentially still have Yetzirah, you see the difference between the people, the tzaddik, as we spoke about earlier, the person who was giving God his essence, is someone, everybody's born with the Yetzer Hara. But the tzaddik is someone who takes his entire Yetzer Hara and eradicates it. He metamorphosizes it. He transforms it, turns it into a holy entity. Like David HaMelech, who says, "V'libi chalal bikirbi," my heart is clean, my heart is empty in me. I've hollowed out my heart, my Yetzer Hara, and I've turned it over. Chalal also means a corpse. I've taken my Yetzer Hara and killed it. Chazal say, "Shaharge betainus." He killed it through a fast. He fasted so much that he killed his Yetzer Hara. It doesn't exist anymore. So a person like that can know 100% that all of his actions are going to be in the service of Hashem. But as long as we still have the struggle, as we're still within the battle, we don't know. And therefore, we cannot sell all of our produce to Hashem that is going to grow later. Now I could. I can own up to my thought, speech, and action right now because I can control the now, but I don't know what's going to be tomorrow. You'll say, I can control tomorrow. Yeah, but that's tomorrow's decision. And who says I'm going to be in that state of mind that I'm going to want to control it? Maybe I'm just going to go after the instincts and the desires of my body. So you can't make such a sale. But that is like the story. There's a story of the Rambam. The Rambam and the advisors of the king, they were once in an argument. And the king's wise men, they were saying that the human being is so great. Look what the human being has accomplished. Created such magnificent things. And the Rambam says a human being could create things, but he can only fashion that which is already. But he can't transform, he can't change the core nature of something to turn it into something else he cannot do. It was a debate. So they said, you know what? They're going to try to prove their point. So they had this little demonstration. And we're one of the king's advisors brought in a cat. And this was his pet, the cat that he had for a long time. And he had trained this cat to act like a human being. And he dressed the cat up. The cat came walking in. And the cat was wearing a top hat, like Dr. Seuss's Cat in the Hat. And he had a bow tie. He had a nice tuxedo. And the cat was walking on its two hind legs in an upright position. And he was carrying off to the table, and he set the table. He put out the tablecloths, and then he put out the plates, and he put out the forks, and the knives, and the glasses. Everything was beautiful. Then he started serving a meal, bringing in the food. It was unbelievable. And it looked like, you know, okay, you see, what do you mean? You can't change the nature of someone. You see, you can train even a cat. The Rambam was waiting, and suddenly the cat was bringing in a tray full of plates with soup. And as the cat is approaching the table, the Rambam opened a little bag and emptied its contents. And suddenly, three little gray things were running on the floor. And in 1 second, the cat pounced, dropped down on all four, dropped the soup, and dripping in soup, the cat goes running after the mice. And everything has been proven that you can train a cat until he sees a mouse. He can behave like a human. He can look like a human until he sees a mouse. Once the mouse is in front of his eyes, gone is all of the training, and the cat is going to fall back to its essential character. And this is the story of our lives. We try to train ourselves. We have an animal inside of us. We work hard. We try to make a mensch out of ourselves. We think we've reached a higher aspiration, a higher state. We're spiritual people. We're not lowly. We just had Pesach. We've been enlightened. Sometimes we daven well. Sometimes we experience higher desires, and we think we've attained already a level. And then right after davening, there's a kiddush, and there's herring, and there's kugel, and there's chalent, and suddenly all these higher desires and wants are gone, and I'm back like a total cow, and with my head right in the food, and that's my pleasure in life, even though I really felt that I love God. What happened? You brought out the mouse. So that's the frustration of this individual, anybody that's less than a tzaddik. Like, I can't sell it, but I really want to. I really want to be able to have at least an assurance that I can give to Hashem my peiros at least. But I can't, because I can't give something that I don't own. So there is an etzah. There is a manner in which you can do it. And that is, even though you can't sell the hardware, even though you can't sell the machinery itself, Even though, unless you're a tzaddik who has the ability, and the Tanya explains that there are some people who don't have the capacity to experience that inner transformation. There are some people with the capacity of being a tzaddik. He proves it from the Zohar and from certain places. Some people don't have the capacity to go so deep into their animal soul until they flip it over. And there are some people who can't do it. So those who cannot experience and cannot accomplish such a total transformation. So do I have to always live on the edge? Will it always be questionable how my behavior? Am I always at the edge of sin? And I can never declare myself being owned by Hashem, at least my behavior. So the answer is, you could do it. And that is, you can sell the tree for its fruits. You can sell the animal for its fruits, which means a person could affect even his animal consciousness. In other words, true, yes indeed, tzaddikim are the only ones who can take their entire animal soul and convert it and turn it into a force of holiness. That essentially the animal soul only wants God in the same way like our neshama wants Hashem. They can enlighten the beast. However, most people cannot do that, but we could at least imprint upon our animal consciousness that it too should at least get some kind of a feeling towards holiness. And it would sort of, and we will say that that it can develop emotions and love and a drive towards the spiritual and towards the godly. It will be second emotion, it won't be the essential emotion. In other words, of course, underlying deep inside in my inner hidden subconsciousness, the animal soul will always crave for the earthy, for the lowly, for the ungodly. Because that's its nature, unless a tzaddik, as we said earlier. For regular people, that will always be its nature. But I could imprint that it shouldn't only be that I'm suppressing its desire, but change the animal soul's desire, at least on the surface level, that it too should begin to have an appreciation for the godly, for the holy. Which means I am selling the animal, I'm selling the object for its fruits. Because automatically, if on the outer conscious level, the animal consciousness also desires Hashem, so what are the thoughts that it's going to produce? What are the speech that it's going to produce? And what are actions? It's going to be holy speech, holy activity, holy thoughts. So I could sort of assure that my behavior in the future is going to be accordance to God's will if my avodas Hashem, my service to Hashem, is not just, you know, I don't always stay at the edge. I work hard to go deeper, to affect my animal consciousness through sincere working hard during davening, to change my perspective on life, to change my perspective on reality. Even though I can't do it completely, but I can do it to a certain degree, that Hashem becomes the reality of my life, even of my animal consciousness. And that's the idea of guf l'peirisav, the body for the peiris. And here there's just one more thought to conclude, and that, as we said earlier, that even though generally a person cannot sell fruits, cannot give something that does not exist yet, you can only give the produce if you're giving the object for its produce, but you can't give the produce itself because you don't own it yet. But we said if you're giving it to tzedakah, if you're giving it to the Beis HaMikdash, you could do so because then you're obligated to do it as a neder, and then it's considered as if it's theirs already. As we spoke in the early beginning of the class, what does that mean in terms of our avodas Hashem, in terms of our psychological connection to God? The idea is as follows: this that we say that we don't have ownership and authority over our bodies, to be able to make our bodies, that we don't have ownership over our future decisions until the time comes. That is only when it comes to matters of the mundane. You see, there are two aspects in our lives, two areas in which our lives, in which we need to connect to Hashem. One of them is the realm of mitzvah. You know, when Hashem tells us to do a mitzvah, we will do the mitzvah. You know, whatever the requirements of mitzvahs are. You're supposed to give 10% of your money for tzedakah, right? You're supposed to wear tefillin every day if you're a man. You're supposed to wear tzitzis. And you're supposed to learn Torah. And you're supposed to make blessings. And all the mitzvahs that we're supposed to do. Those are acts of holiness. You're supposed to pray 3 times a day. And then there is the mundane part of our lives. But we know that the mundane part of our life, too, is supposed to be done for a higher purpose. It's supposed to be done with kedusha. That's called the Dvarim of Rishus, the permissible side of our lives. And here there's a major difference. The battle is much, much harder when it comes to the permissible. When it comes to doing a mitzvah, okay, you know, it's I'm not saying it's not a battle, but it's easier. Why? Because essentially mitzvahs are the domain of your godly soul. So when you're doing a mitzvah, you're entering into the home court of your neshama. Now, there's always a home court advantage. As you're fighting the battle, even though the Yetzer Hara is going to come and try to stop you from doing it, but you're fighting it on your turf. You're fighting it in the turf of the godly soul. You're in shul. This is a time of davening. Okay, so here is a place the Yetzer Hara is going to try to stop you in the davening, to look at your phone and to read your emails and to do so. Okay, but at least you're in the area, you're in the zone of Kedusha. But then there's the other aspect of your life. When you're going to eat, or you're going to do all the other mundane activities, going into your business, so there you're entering into the home court of your animal soul. And you're trying to infiltrate your animal soul with Kedusha feelings. So over here, you don't have that advantage. And therefore, that's the difference. If a person is in regards to Hegdish and starts to tzedakah and got to something holiness, you promise that you're going to declare that you're going to do. Let's say you take upon yourself a achlata, a decision, that for the next 3 months I'm going to learn Torah every day, or I'm going to do a mitzvah every day. That kind of a declaration is more effective, and it's considered as if it's done already. Why? Because it's in regards to the realm of your neshama, where the godly soul is anyways, because this is its realm. This is its the animal soul, the Yetzer Hara wants to interfere. So we say that you have enough strength to say that I'm giving it to Hashem. However, the when it comes to matters of rishus, matters of permit of the mundane world, where it's much tougher to infiltrate with godliness, over there you can't own the future activities. You have to take one battle at a time, moment at a time, day by day, moment by moment. Each moment when you accomplish. And you can have godly focus when you're in your mundane activities, it's an incredible victory. That itself is but you can't have that assurance that you can make a future, a promise that this will be my behavior, and all the time I will be eating, well, I will be eating L'Shem Shemayim. That we don't have that ability to do so, unless, of course, you're a tzaddik. And then you're converting yourself completely, or that other level that we spoke earlier, you're affecting even your animal consciousness to have a transformation in regards to its behavior that you can do. But again, that takes a lot of deeper effort, deeper avoda. And that is generally a summary of all these laws as they apply to our connection with Hashem. As a result of us studying these laws, hopefully just by studying it, this itself will affect and bring a transformation in us, that our hearts will become a little more receptive to the holy, to the godly. And as a result of that, we will bring about the fulfillment of Hashem's promise that He's going to acquire Bayoimahu Yosef Hashem Shenis, Yosef Hashem Yod Liknois Esha'er Amay, that Hashem is going to acquire us a second time, which means that the acquisition is going to happen with Hashem's assistance from above, and we're going to become completely entered into a holy state of mind and in a holy consciousness. And we will bring that godly consciousness to the entire world. May we merit to see that right now.
Nichsefu v'gam konsu nafshi lechatz lois ha'shay. Nichsefu v'gam konsu nafshi. Oyoy nichsefu v'gam konsu nafshi lechatz lois. Nichsefu v'gam konsu nafshi lechatzot tzashay. Oli yibi, oli bi yibzuri, yirameni, el kam al-chor. Yisuri, Yerana, Elkanah.